Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. How can people of faith bring their values to work in government in the public square? Ann Michael speaks with Mike McCurry, former White House Press Secretary and Director of Wesley Theological Seminary's Center for Public Theology.
I'm Ann Michael, Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary. I'm editor of Leading Ideas e-newsletter, and I'm also pleased to be the host of this Leading Ideas Talks podcast, talking today with Mike McCurry. Many of you will remember Mike from his work in the political sphere, most prominently as White House Press Secretary from 1994 to 1998. What you may not know is that Mike is also the consummate churchman, active in his local congregation here in the D.C. area, active as a denominational leader, and over the past 10 years, he's earned a degree from Wesley Seminary and now serves as Distinguished Professor of Public Theology and also as Director of Wesley's Center for Public Theology. It's an honor to have you here, Mike, as part of our Wesley Seminary family and to be talking with you today. I want to just launch right into the subject of churches and public theology by asking you this question. You hear so many people say that politics don't belong in church. So what would you say to someone who holds that belief?
Well, you know, part of this goes to the idea that there's separation between church and state. And that comes from a very famous letter that Thomas Jefferson sent to a bunch of Baptists up in Connecticut, where he said there should be a wall of separation between, you know, between the church and the state. But Jefferson, like all the other founders and like all the other people early in our history, were deeply thoughtful and religious people. The idea that faith and politics were connected in the DNA of America was always there, even if we had the idea that there would be a separation of church and state. We did not want to have an organized religion that everyone had to profess as a, you know, practical people building a new republic. And I think that's the critical difference, understanding that there's a separation of church and state, but at the same time, there is a deep connection between religious faith and who we are as the American people. And I think that's where we try to bridge those differences.
Mm-hmm. And so what does that look like to you?
Well, it means that you bring people together to kind of talk about how does faith inform public attitudes. And we've seen a lot of that. You know, we think of Martin Luther King Jr. and the role that the church played in the civil rights movement. I mean, it was a very active involvement of the church in the political square. We think of the moral majority, and then when it kind of turned into a different direction where the evangelical Christian right kind of rose up and sort of professed certain beliefs. But I think all of it connects to the idea that politics and faith do connect one way or another in this country. And, you know, it's kind of unique. We you know, in a lot of European democracies, you don't see that connection between faith and the way people act in the public square. But I think we are trying to bridge that difference now and find exciting ways in which people of faith can engage in the public square. And that's the role that we play at the Center for Public Theology.
Yeah, if we think of the civil rights movement in the 60s and the moral majority in the 80s and beyond, where do you see that energy most prominent now?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of energy in the idea that people of faith can participate and be active in you know, the work that it gets done politically. We saw that with Reverend William Barber down in North Carolina and a lot of what he did with Moral Mondays. You know, he really began to develop a idea that there's a movement that can be engaged in trying to bring people of faith together to make a difference. And I think I think we see that replicated in a lot of different ways, but I think we have to be careful. I mean, we always have to be careful about how we profess political beliefs.
You've worked with public issues in government, in the political sphere, in the private sector, and now in the church. And I wanted to ask you, given that breadth of experience that you've had, what's different or what should be different in how the church approaches public issues?
Well, I think that, you know, there are very few places left where we can have genuine, authentic dialogue. We see, you know, you can watch cable television all day long and see people talking past each other, a lot of controversy and conflict. And I really believe the church is a place where people can come together and have different points of view, and everyone can be loved at the end of the day, because we are there to profess a faith, but we are also there to confront some of the controversies and differences that we have. And, you know, that is hard to do. You know, many pastors don't want to talk about politics. They don't want to talk about the current issues because, you know, they know that's going to create controversy in their congregation. And so they sort of flee from that, and then they don't engage those issues. And, you know, we end up not having the kinds of conversations I think that we need to have. But the church is the one place where I think, or one of the only places where we can actually bring people together and define what we think is a common good and try to find ways that we move together as a country and as, you know, citizens of a democracy.
Yeah, I think you've already named something that I'm so aware of. We, in the last 2 years, or I guess really in the time since the 2016 election, we reread so much of what's written in the church leadership realm. And I mean, the dominant issue that I'm seeing is this question around how leaders can effectively engage public issues given the tensions of the time. And yet, you know, what a lot of these people say is they feel like they're just walking a tightrope, that they're kind of in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation, that if you want to be prophetic and take on public issues, you know, you're still, it's just a very dangerous space for a leader.
Well, I really, really understand that. And I've talked to a lot of pastors who, when they use their prophetic voice to talk about issues that are in the current public environment or, you know, controversial, they know they're going to get in trouble because they know that some of their congregation will not, you know, appreciate the perspective that they're preaching from. But they've got to use their prophetic voice. I mean, we here at Wesley Seminary train people to sort of use your prophetic voice in a profound way. Now, part of that is to understand there's a cost. Now, you may have some people, if you're a preacher and you stand up and you talk, you know, from your heart and from Scripture about what you think are the important issues of the day, there may be people that disagree with you. There may be people that walk out of the congregation and don't come back. However, one of the things I think we are learning is that if you engage in these public issues and if you really speak in that prophetic voice, you actually may end up attracting more people, and particularly young people. You know, one of the things we should talk a little bit about young people who are called the nuns, not like the nuns with habits, but the nuns because they're not affiliated with any organized religion.
The N-O-N-E-S.
Yes, and N-O-N-E-S. And they are, you know, looking for people who actually will engage in these issues that are important in the community. And they want to be parts of congregations that are actually active and doing community engagement. So whatever you subtract because you're losing people because you're using your voice in a particular way, you may gain people who actually will come back to the church because they say, I want to be a part of a vital congregation that is engaged in the community. And this is not, you know, liberal or conservative or Republican or Democrat. It means there are many, many different ways in which we see people engaged in the community and being involved. And I think that that's the story of the church. At a time in which we talk about the decline in mainstream participation in organized religion, and we know the numbers and statistics, we do know that the congregations that are effective are the ones that are actually engaged in doing work and working on these issues in the public square. And those are the ones that actually attract and excite people who want to be a part of Christian ministry.
Yeah. No, I think that's right, both from what I know from research and also what I know from the experience of congregations that I'm familiar with, that you know, taking a stand may attract as many, if not more, people than it repels. And certainly that's true among younger generations. But at the same time, I think this idea that, we're going to lose these people, but we're going to get these other people, I mean, is there a way that we can make space for the people that don't agree with a particular point of view?
Yeah, I think it's finding the issues in which there's commonality across a political spectrum and a theological spectrum. Now, I'll use an example of my own church. I am a leader in my local Methodist congregation in suburban Maryland. And we had a pastor who just was excited by a vision that we should be involved in feeding hungry people. And so that has got us involved in a hunger ministry, and we do a lot of stuff. We feed hungry people. We have a food pantry. We do all that kind of stuff. That crosses political boundaries. I mean, there are people, you know, there are liberals in our congregation who say, well, we need to fight to increase federal subsidies for programs like SNAP, which is the federal subsidy program for feeding hungry people. And then we have people who say, well, we need more efforts like ours, which are private sector and, you know, efforts that churches can make and that nonprofit institutions can make and bring that together because we don't need the government to be in the middle of everything. But everyone comes together around, you know, there's one central mission there, which is a very biblical one, and it comes from Jesus, which is feed the hungry. And we do that. Mm-hmm. And so, that's kind of the area in which you begin to define what is a common good that people can come together with, irrespective of what their political beliefs are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example. I guess a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think of feeding the hungry as an issue that leads you into the political sphere. But when we push people to start thinking about the root causes of problems, and I'm a big advocate of that in mission education. I think so often, the church has been inclined to put Band-Aids on problems rather than encourage people to really think about why the problems exist in the first place.
Right, right. I mean, in my experience, people instantly begin to cross the political boundaries because conservative people say, okay, I understand now why we have these government programs like school breakfast programs or school lunch programs or why we need federal subsidies to give aid to people who are actually taking care of the hungry. And then more liberal people say, okay, we can't rely on the government to do everything. We've got to be involved and engaged, and we have to do our own work through our own nonprofit faith institutions like churches to do what we can do. So you get you get some boundaries that are crossed there, which I think is a very powerful thing. I mean, I think that's what we need to train people to do. You know, here at a seminary, we want to send people out to serve in the church who will really know how to do that kind of work. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy.
Right.
So knowing how to train people to do that is, you know, part of what we are trying to do to create a new generation of leaders for the church.
One of the things that I'm aware of, I've mentioned already that I see such a trend in the last 2 years in terms of so much being written about public engagement and the church. And, you know, we're sitting here in Washington, D.C., where I think it's the norm for churches to be more activist. But I'm also aware that there are many, many, many churches in America, probably the vast majority of churches, where public engagement just really isn't part of their tradition. That's not what they think church is about. And so if a congregation or a pastor or a particular church leader in that type of setting wanted to begin to think about what it would be to become more engaged in the public sphere, what advice would you give them about getting started in a constructive way?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think there are just many congregations around the country in which people start with the premise, we don't want to talk politics in church. You know, now the interesting thing is they will certainly go out in the parking lot of the church and talk politics in the parking lot. And they will talk about all the contemporary issues or what's come up. But I think that hearing that brought into the liturgy of the church and brought into the pulpit and brought into the way in which we speak prophetically to what our Christian commitments are. Any of the great traditions have got ways in which we talk about a golden rule. How would you treat someone in the way that you want to be treated yourself? And I think that is a first guiding principle here, that we want to be respective of anyone's position, but we want to be treated as we would treat others. And I think that is that's an idea that could infuse our politics and change the way in which we talk about this. But it requires pastors and local church leaders to stand up on their feet and be courageous enough to speak to these issues. And quite frankly, as you know, many pastors don't want to talk about politics, and they're afraid people will flee from the pews if they begin to raise these issues. But if they use those voices correctly, and if we can help them then develop, how do you deal with conflict? Like, if you're going to stand up and say things from the pulpit that you know may not sit well with parts of your congregation, then how do you create dialogue afterwards? You know, what happens during coffee hour? You know, how do you bring people together after the sermon that you give if you're going to use your prophetic voice? How do you then have a structured conversation so that people who say, what the pastor said didn't sit well with me? Because you don't want them to leave the church angry. You want them to leave them feeling like they've been heard and that their viewpoint has been listened to. So how do you create those structures? How do you build, you know, an environment, particularly on Sunday mornings when we worship? How do you do that?
Mm-hmm. So I know in the area of race, that's been one of sort of the cutting edge issues where there's been a real call for the church to make place for dialogue. What are some of the issues of the day that you think are really imperative in terms of the church being open to those conversations?
Well, we the agenda is long. You know, the one that I think we're dealing with that is most immediate is immigration. Yeah. Who do we welcome as the stranger? You know, how do we deal with people who are, you know, desperate to get away from situations of violence and drug trafficking and human trafficking and the things that they're trying to flee from and come, you know, not necessarily come to the United States, they're just trying to get away from whatever they have confronted. And so with that then triggers a very profound debate we're having about immigration and building a wall and all that. So that's an issue. We have this enormous problem now with, we are destroying our planet and our climate. And there has been ample evidence now from the scientific community that we have got human causes of climate change. So how do we deal with that? And it's interesting to me that that's becoming increasingly a political issue, you know,
and a religious issue. Yeah.
And it's also a religious issue, and it's one where, by the way, when you talk to young evangelical conservatives, this is one area where they have actually some connection to people who come from more liberal traditions or liberal progressive traditions, because they actually want to do something about protecting God's creation. I mean, that's the way they would frame the issue. And so that's an issue. Poverty and its impact on communities is one where I think we see a lot of unity across the theological spectrum. Like, how could such a wealthy country have people who are living in abject poverty? How could we have kids who go to school hungry in the morning? You know, what do we do about that? How do we bridge that gap? So, I mean, there are a lot of issues on the agenda where I sort of see that there's ways in which you bring people from different theological perspectives together and also people from different political perspectives. And I think that, I mean, the church should be encouraging that. I mean, we ought to be a safe sanctuary for right. those kinds of conversations. And that's, you know, that's culture, I think, that we're trying to build.
Yeah. I mean, as I think about that, the issues that we've just named, race and immigration and climate change, those are issues where there is so much space, I think, for constructive, open, interpersonal dialogue to help people really understand the nature of the problems and their personal responsibility and the community response. But these issues seem different to me than if you think back to the example you gave of the civil rights movement and the moral majority movement, which were much more, there was a specific agenda of actions that, or in the case of the moral majority, you know, the single issue politics. I mean, that ended up being about very specific things. I mean, do you see the issues of race and immigration and climate change eventually moving to that kind of more focused advocacy?
So there are some issues in which it's very hard to find the gray area between the black and the white, because there may be not be that area. And I think that's something that we need to speak to and to be a part of dealing with, because you just may not find areas in which there you can define common ground or compromise or let's split the difference one way or another, because there are absolutes. Mm-hmm. And I think defining where those issues are and what the differences are between people, and then recognizing that there are just going to be people who have profoundly different beliefs on this, but everybody's should be respected. Even if you strongly disagree with whatever position they take, how do you do that? And how do you create that culture? How do you create an environment in which people not leave angry or feeling that someone next to them in the pew they you know don't like anymore because they have a different point of view? I mean, right. we got to figure out how do you remain in Christian love even when you have strong disagreements on these issues that are very profound and sometimes irreconcilable.
So we talked a minute ago about the many, many churches in America for whom engagement in the public sphere is not a part of their expression of faith. But looking at the other end of the spectrum, there are these very activist churches, and we know a lot of them here in Washington, that are known for their advocacy and their public witness. What do you think it's important for them to have in mind as they pursue their witness?
You know, the great conversation in this whole debate is, what is the role of the church? Are we there for the salvation of souls and to bring people to a place of grace where they accept the fact that they are saved by the grace of God, versus what do we do as a result of that commitment and what we do to address the needs of the community? And this has been a great tension between, you know, is the church about salvation and about saving souls, or is it about saving communities and being engaged in the community? Now, the obvious answer is it's about both.
Right.
and the one is connected to the yeah. other. But I think that part of it is to sort of bridge that difference, because expression of faith that brings you into the public square, that makes you part of wanting to make change happen. So it's not either or, it's both. And that how do we bring those together? Your faith convictions then require of you certain actions in the political sphere, and how you do that and how you do it gracefully, it's not easy, but it is important.
Right. So for these activist churches, making sure that their public witness is always grounded and reflected in their true theological identity.
Right, in theology and scripture, and how do you, where are we guided by scripture to be politically active so that you're not just an agent of political change in the community, that you actually are doing things because you're guided by your theological conviction and by what scripture tells you you need to do. And there's great warrant for that in all of the scriptures, and particularly in the teachings of Jesus, so that we know that, being engaged in the public square is not something that is anti-Christian or, is sort of prohibited. We know that's part of what it means to be in a Christian community. But how you do that, how you teach that, how you train, for us here at the seminary, how you train people to go out and do that, that's all more complicated than it sounds.
Mm-hmm. So, moving on, as we begin to draw this to a close, I wanted to give you the opportunity to say a word about your own work here at Wesley Seminary and how you see that impacting the witness of the church.
We want to take people who come out of different walks of life. We want to go to Capitol Hill. We want to go to here in Washington, since we are set, we sit here in Washington. We want to awaken a desire for deeper faith in a lot of people who serve in the public square. And I think that, that is the primary work that we're trying to do at the Center for Public Theology here at Wesley Seminary. How do you bring people who are in the public square into a deeper connection to their own faith and then see that reflected in the work that they do in their work?
That's so interesting, because you framed it exactly the opposite of the way I assumed. It's not bringing the church to the public square, but it's bringing the public square to the church.
Correct. Yeah. I think there are a lot of people now. I from my work in politics for 35 years, I know a lot of people who work on Capitol Hill and work in the political world, and I am frequently surprised at how many of them say, "Boy, I'd really like to learn more about, what is it that you were doing at Wesley Seminary?" They're curious about that. Many of them are people who worship, semi-regularly, as many people do. But they have some connection to their faith, and they want to know, what is that? Now, some of them jokingly always refer to me as Reverend McCurry, and I tell them, listen, no, I'm not ordained. God has standards for that. So, and I haven't met those standards yet. But they are really, really interested in how they connect their own spiritual life and their faith to the work that they do, whether it's in politics or lobbying.
I wanted to give you an opportunity to really sort of name a vision that you aspire to when you're thinking about the calling of the church to the public square, but maybe it's the other way around. But when you think of the hope that your work is aimed at, how would you name it?
But my vision would be people feeling like going to church is a way to connect what they do the other 6 days of the week to what they do on a Sunday. Or if, other monotheistic days face what they do on Friday or Saturday. I'm not trying to be exclusively Christian on this. But there is a way in which deeper spiritual center will bring to you an ability to do better at what you do in the other days of the week in which you work here in Washington. Now, this kind of here in Washington, we're impacting public policy, we're impacting the way in which the business of our nation is transacted. I mean, that's what being in Washington is all about, which is a unique responsibility we have here at Wesley Seminary because we happen to be here in Washington. So right. we have to be cognizant of what our geographic location is, which brings us into the middle of this conversation, maybe in a way that another seminary somewhere else would not be. But I think that's what our unique responsibility is. How do you awaken in people a way in which they see that their faith, their spirituality can make a difference in what they do, in the work they do to attend to the needs of the country? And so my vision would be that everybody would begin to say, boy, when I go to church, I get fed and I get nurtured and I get spiritual help to do the important work that I do on behalf of our entire country and the citizens of our country, regardless of what they believe religiously.
That's a really helpful way to put it, because what I'm hearing you say is that faith and public life is an expression of bringing your faith to life. And it's not something apart from that. It's one of the ways in which we live out our faith. That's so helpful.
Right, that those are contiguous right. things, that they really, your faith and your public life are so interconnected that they are inseparable. And making people feel comfortable in expressing that in their public settings, wherever they are, that's a very, very important thing. If people are more, when I worked for Bill Clinton in the White House, I don't think I was particularly religious and certainly didn't profess my religion in a very public way. But I remember reading George Stephanopoulos's book. Big media star now, but he was my colleague in the Clinton White House. And when I read his book, I remember thinking, he talked a lot about his own spiritual dilemma. And I sat next to him on Air Force One, and we traveled thousands of miles together and sat next to him in every motorcade that the president had. And we talked about everything, but never about our faith. Yeah. And to me, that is the conversations that need to happen, that we need to be talking about. How does your faith move you?
So it's a vision of making space in public life for people to be authentic and open about their own faith
right.
perspective. And that's a really helpful vision.
To be openly proclaiming about your own faith mm-hmm. Not being furtive about it, not right. hiding it under the bushel, mm-hmm. but really openly professing without being annoying, because we want people to have genuine and authentic conversation. And I think if we foster that, if we kind of have that kind of dialogue, that kind of conversation, we will be in a very, very better place.
Well, Mike, thanks for elevating that vision, and thanks for all the work that you do here at Wesley Seminary and elsewhere to, I think, make space for that in public life and in the church. So grateful to have the opportunity to talk with you today.
Well,
I appreciate
it so much. And thank you to anybody who listens to this podcast, and bless all of you.
Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by the Doing Good Well Video Toolkit. Explore the fruitfulness of mission efforts and learn practical strategies to help ensure your church's mission hits the mark. The Doing Good Well Video Toolkit is available on download and DVD at churchleadership.com/doinggoodwell. On the next Leading Ideas Talks, we discuss leading in a changing culture with Dr. Juan Francisco Martinez, Professor of Hispanic Studies and Pastoral Leadership at the Fuller School of Theology in Pasadena, California. Dr. Martinez is the co-author of Churches, Cultures, and Leadership.
Usually the changes that bother us or that are difficult for us to deal with are the ones that seem to push outside of our limits, outside of the spaces where we feel comfortable. So how do we help people? How do we help people understand that? Again, it depends on how open are we to having the conversation. First of all, for some of us, it may be so frustrating that we've shut down. And we closed down, and we were like the turtle, you know, like the types of turtles that have a hatch on the front, and we just lock ourselves in, and we run away from the situation. And so how do we deal with change? We first need to recognize that we do confront change and the different ways that we tend to deal with it.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.